So welcome to Advanced.net Debugging. How many of you are here because your coworker's code sucks? Right? You know, I just wanted to check. Because I know if you're coming to this session, you guys are top notch. It's your coworkers that are making your life a living hell, right? So let's talk about Advanced.net Debugging. I've come from a company called Wintellect, and a very important thing up here I want to point out is my email address. Because we're going to cover a lot of stuff this afternoon. Some of the stuff you're going to use first thing tomorrow morning. Some of the stuff might be 6 months from now. Please don't hesitate to send me an email if you've got a question. If I don't know the answer, somebody at Wintellect does. We'll be happy to help you out. So just send it to me. We'll be happy to deal with it. General development questions, whatever it is, I'd be more than happy. The one thing I will not be able to help you with are relationship problems. Okay, you're on your own for those. Todd F. at Wintellect.com. If you have relationship problems, Todd will take care of you. I basically have the greatest job in the world. I debug other people's applications for a living. How cool is that, right? Isn't debugging fun, right? How many of you have been there? It's 2 in the morning. You've got all the books laid out. You got 5,000 browser windows open, and you go, that's how the garbage collector works, right? Isn't it where you learn everything? That's why debugging is fun. And, so I get to go work on all these really cool problems around the business. And, it's not like people call us up and say, oh, yeah, John, can you fly halfway around the world because we forgot to initialize the second parameter to this method? Can you fly around the world and type equal new objects for us? No, they call us up and say things like, it only happens in production. Do any bugs actually happen in test? I'm not convinced, okay? They're all in production when I got to deal with them. They'll say things like, we can't figure it out. And they'll always follow it up with something like, it's costing us $2 million a day. And my response is, we'll fix it for half. Okay? Your standard rate. Now, here is the code download. Everything I talk about in the session here, you can download at wintellect.com/download/.netdebuggingcode.zip. We'll talk about what's in there. It's got a bunch of macros and cool stuff for Visual Studio, all geared up for Dev 10, because Dev 10 is cool. How many of you are using Dev 10? How many of you are going to be using Dev 10 within the next 3 months? How about next 6 months? Okay, move faster. Dev 10 is awesome because you can still target .NET 2.0 completely with it. It's nearly a frictionless move between Visual Studio 2008 and Dev 10. And you're missing out on great debugger features, great profiler features, and other things like that. So everybody in this room needs to move to it as fast as you can. It just released yesterday. So we're going to talk about the debugging in here. We don't have time to go over the prerequisites, but I'm assuming that you guys are doing the right stuff. You're building all builds with PDB files. You've got your Symbol server set up. You've got your machines all set up to use Symbol servers. You need the full Symbol servers for all of your builds. There's some URLs you can look at to talk about that stuff. So let's talk about a pain. I hate to do this to you, but the very first thing I got to talk about is a detriment. You guys know what a detriment is? That's a feature that makes your life a living hell. And Visual Studio's got a gigantic one. It's called Just My Code. Okay? Just My Code is evil and mean. Many questions I get from people say, I'm trying to debug this, I'm trying to do that. You know what the problem is? They have Just My Code turned on because that's the default. So what is this Just My Code evilness? Just My Code makes it so that if you don't have the source code, you can't debug it. That's bad. Also means you can't debug release builds. I don't know about you, but I kind of need to debug a release build every once in a while. Okay? So turn off Just My Code. I don't want to get into the long explanation about why this is an option, but believe me, the debugger team hates this with a passion. They're very, very upset that this is the default, but when people at Soma's level kind of dictate it, this is what happens. But for everybody in this room, you guys are doing real world stuff, you're doing release build stuff, you're doing production stuff, you need to turn this off. This also enables a bunch of cool functionality in the debugger we'll talk about, so I'm assuming you guys are all dealing with that. All right, people that come to talks like this, you need to turn this off. It's your coworkers that have the problem. Anyway, let's talk about these debugging properties, right? I just want to hit a couple of things here. One of the cool things with Visual Studio now is that, we've got full support for mixed debugging and all of that. So, you know, we can go to the debug properties here, and this is where we turn all of this stuff on. This is where you can set command line arguments and so on. Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention something. I really don't care what sort of .NET you're developing. Neither does the debugger. You do the exact same thing, whether it's ASP.NET, WCF, WPF, Windows Form, console apps. Doesn't matter. Debugging is debugging is debugging, period. So I'm going to do my demos here with the Windows Forms app. That way it's just a little bit quicker. But it's the same exact thing no matter what sort of development you're doing. That's the good news. Okay? So that's the cool stuff. But, you know, all of this project stuff, we're going to talk about remote debugging in here. All the big stuff is down here for I forgot I have a live meeting on. Forgive me. I accidentally turned on the magnifier. Turn that off. There we go. But we've got all the managed code down here. You can enable unmanaged debugging. So how many of you are dealing with .NET or, native components? Right? Anybody? Yay. Hey, me too. Still got to debug them? What's the big thing with Dev 10? You can debug 64-bit. How many of you are doing 64-bit? Can the rest of you spell it? It's going to be in your future, okay? Right? You want to target Server 2008 R2? You want to target Exchange? You want to target SharePoint 2010? Guess what? You're doing 64-bit development, okay? So everything's moving 64-bit. Start getting prepared for it. Just give you some warning there. So that's where we set all of the options, you know, all of that stuff. Now, a lot of people ask, what is that VS host thing? That VS host thing is for Windows Forms, WPF, and console applications. And, you know, starting a process in Windows is expensive. So one of the things they do is that for those kind of, you know, standard applications, that the debugger starts, and then they start another process. If you look at it with Process Explorer, you see that, my program myprogramd.vshost.exe is running underneath it. It's spawned by it. Well, that VS host process is there just to load things up and make things faster, right? At .exe and .dll, that's not a .NET thing. That's a Windows thing. You guys all realize Windows knows nothing at all about .NET, right? It just knows about exes and DOLs. So if everything starts at Windows, ooh, it's a native app, ooh, and then something in .NET run, you know, starts up, and then that's what makes it a .NET application, right? So, you know, this VS host is there because when you go to debug a Windows Form Console WPF app, it actually loads your exe into that VS host exe and runs it. Right? You know, if the world were all .NET, right, the operating system we're dealing with was an all .NET operating system, we wouldn't have DLLs and exes. Everything would be a .ASS file. I'll let that sink in for a minute, okay? Wow, I put you guys to sleep within 5 minutes of starting.
Excellent.
But, you know, it's there to help speed you up. It'll also help you with debugging partially trusted code. Any of you doing click once, okay. You guys are going to love this because now you can debug your stuff by turning on the ClickOne security settings. You can set the specific option based on the admin settings. So if the admin says, hey, we're going to run this thing without file IO permissions, you can debug your app in those exact permissions. And many of you do it ClickOne have dealt with that. So you just turn this on in the security settings, then you can play around with the security settings and then debug your app in that environment, and that's the big thing VS Host gives you. But here's the hint about VS Host. What's the number one feature in Dev 10? IntelliTrace. You all better answer IntelliTrace. Everything else is secondary. Okay? IntelliTrace is the only reason you upgrade to Dev 10. And you know, we'll talk about it. It's the best new debugging thing I've seen in 20 years. I'm very excited about it. But here's a little hint. We'll talk more about IntelliTrace later. One of the things I'm finding out doing a lot of debugging with Dev 10 is this VS host process. It kind of a little bit gets in the way with IntelliTrace. It's not evil. Don't get me wrong. But VS host creates a whole bunch of extra threads in your app. So when you open up the log, you're trying to figure out, well, which one's mine? I'm finding that I'm turning off VS host, right? So I'll start the process because I want that trace log to be very close to, or IntelliTrace log to be very close to what my app is. So that's just one of the things I'm finding myself doing, you know, a lot these days. Hey, let's just focus on my app's code. I don't want to have to go, is that thread from VS host? You know, this just makes it a little more obvious which one's yours, okay? Let's talk about a Visual Studio debugging trick, right? Everybody thinks, oh, you got to have a project opener to debug with Visual Studio. No, you don't, right? No, all you got to do, if you want to debug any program anywhere, let's start up another instance of Visual Studio. You can debug anything you want to by doing a file, open, project solution. And go to the directory and pick the exe you want to debug. Right? So let's go debug this exe. Now this requires that you install the C++ stuff from Visual Studio, which you all need to do just for this feature. Okay? This space is cheap. So I've opened this project up. You can see animated algorithm sitting there. Woohoo! Right? So I can just press F10, and guess what we get? Right? It's going to crank around a little bit. And you know, live meeting is killing my machine. And it will eventually, there, it found the PDB file, right? So it found the PDB file in the same directory it was done. I'm just debugging my app, right? You can open up any exe you want to and debug it. Okay? That's what's cool about this. So where else does this work, right? This is starting a process, right? You saw that. But let's look at something neat. So I'll stop debugging, and let's go look at the project properties here. Ooh, that looks a little different.
C++.
Hopefully I didn't scare any of you. Right? But this is the C++ system, and a couple of things that come up here. First off, you can add environment variables. The C++ system lets you do that. The debugger type is kind of interesting. It's a little different way of specifying the type of debugger you want to do. And it defaults to auto. And that's where the debugger looks at your binary and says, hey, what kind of binary are you? If you're .NET, it does .NET. If it's native, it does native. But if you want to do mixed, which is native and .NET at the same time, you pick mixed, and now you're debugging from C++ to C# and back. Okay? So, you know, it's kind of cool. But the real reason I want to talk to you about this is this totally cool attach trick. And this doesn't show up in any of the .NET stuff, but we've got the attach set to yes here, and I'm going to press F5. Ooh. What's that telling me? Well, this program isn't running. Okay? So let me go run the program. And I always love those
animated algorithm tools that would show you what an algorithm sorted like, so I wrote one.
Hey, appreciate that, guys. For me
to do UI development, that's a pretty darn big deal, okay?
You know, I think PowerShell is the ultimate UI, okay? So for me to do something like this, it was an act of God. So, you know, anyway, I was kind of curious about how, you know, it was just a fun little app to work on. So the app is running, but notice that the directory it's running in is devpresentationsdemo.netdebug. And if we go over here and we look, there's my path fully specified there. Now when I press F5, what happened? It reached out and attached to that process, right? It's pretty cool. So let me detach from that process. Let's look at something else. Let's detach all, right? You can attach and detach the processes all day long here. And there's my detach all. Cool, right? So, hey, my app's still live. Woo, there you go. Let's run a second instance, okay? Now we get two of my beautiful UIs, okay? So let's go over here and press F5. What's going to happen? Well, obviously it attached to something. Did it randomly pick one? A, B, A, B, B. I don't think so. We can go over and look and see what it did by going to the debug windows. This is where all the windows are hidden in Visual Studio. And let's go down to our wonderful processes window. What did that do? That attached to both of them. Okay. So how many of you do an ASP.NET or anything running inside IIS? Right? Hey, most of you, right? That's what .NET is for, right? So what's the big problem you got trying to, you know, do those kind of apps, right?
Which W3WP.exe has got my process in it, or my app in it. So do what I do.
Do a file, open project solution, open up the W3WP.exe, make sure the debugger's running elevated. You have to, you know, run as admin to do this. Then when you press F5, what's it going to do? Attach to all the W3WP.exes. Hey, now you don't have to think about it, right? Just go set breakpoints in source code. Woohoo, you're done, right? You know where else this works? Remote debugging.
So you can actually attach to
W3WP.exe running on your test machines. And we'll talk about remote debugging at the end of the session here. But, you know, that way we get it all set up. And what I do is I create a solution for each of my test machines. Then, oh, test 01's got a problem. File, open, solution. Press F5, poof, automatically attach all those W3WP.exes on that other machine. So that way you don't have to sit there and go, wow, which of the 17 versions of W3WP.exe is my exe? Who cares?
Just attach all of them, debug all of them, right? It's fully supported by the debugger.
So, you know, by installing the C++ subsystem, we get some additional power than you would normally get out of pure .NET. And, so take advantage of this, right? You know, let's use what we've got to make our lives a little bit easier. Keep hitting the wrong one there, okay?
So there's kind of what I talked about here with the auto and the mix and, you know, stuff.
Oh, this is kind of cool. How many of you have had Visual Studio crash on you?
Okay. Right? If you haven't had Visual Studio
crash on you, what are you doing in here?
one of the problems you have
is how many of you have had this? You guys probably didn't realize that there's an artificial intelligence engine in Visual Studio. And what they look for is they look to see if this is the day you have a deliverable.
And when you have that deliverable, then they crash.
Okay?
So how many of you have had this? Where you open up a project and Visual Studio crashes. But of course it's the project you gotta get done that day. Have any of you seen that crash? What about the one where, you can open up your project, you press F5 and nothing happens? Who's had that one? That's just like, huh? And you just beat it to death, right? What about this one? You open the project, everything's fine, you press F5, you're debugging, but then your breakpoints get hit. You seen that one? Yeah, this is fun stuff. All three of these bugs are related to the exact same thing. Notice next to the solution file, if you turn on hidden files in Explorer, which you all should, you're going to notice a file there called, my solution name .suo. What's happened, this file has become corrupt. That's what's causing the crash, okay? So if you see any flakiness with Visual Studio, what you do, delete that file. All of a sudden, think of this as hygiene for Visual Studio. This is like flossing for Visual Studio, okay? Makes life good, boom. Visual Studio will be much happier. So what's stored in this file? Breakpoints. But hey, with Dev 10, you can export the breakpoints now, so that's no problem. Watch window settings, window layouts, a few other odds and ends, okay? So, just get in the habit of exporting your breakpoints, delete the .suo. Many people have said this one piece of advice was worth suffering through this entire presentation, okay? Because now you know the secret. So now you're going to look like a hero to your coworkers, right? Just go delete the .suo and go, oh, you're my hero. Let me name my firstborn after you. Because you're making their life easier. Okay? So what does it take to corrupt this file? Okay? It's a physical demonstration, so I'll move up. Let's see if this thing follows. What you have to be doing is sitting in front of the computer with your heart beating. Okay? That's what corrupts that file. Here's the funny thing, right? You can tell from my gray hair, the gray in my beard. I'm an old guy, right? I started back in the dark ages. And when did we first report this as a bug to Microsoft? What version of Visual Studio? Visual InterDev. It was before that. Wow, you just gave me a blast in the past, man. Dude, man. We're like old together. Wow,
Visual InterDev. I haven't thought about that in ages.
VC2.
When was VC2 released? Wow, looking at some of you guys, it was before you were born.
Some of you guys look really young. You're scaring me. 1992. You want some more good news? It's still broken at DevNet. Okay. So we're going to 20 years, man. I think this is bug number 2 at Microsoft. And we're going to be dealing with this until Dev 11. Okay.
I know it's being fixed in Dev 11. Isn't it so funny, right? You guys are like, wow, Dev 10 just released, and here's John talking about Dev 11. Dev 11, they're rewriting the debugger from scratch.
And that was the last thing using this. And they've actually got the debuggers all three quarters done for Dev 11.
That's what the debugger team mission was for Dev 10. That was more information than you wanted to know. Anyway, delete the .suo,
okay? Now you learned the big thing. Okay? So there's your big tip. Now you're going to look like a hero to the rest of the company because you can make Visual Studio come back, okay?
So delete that .suo. So let's talk about advanced breakpoints. Let's get ninja on this debugger. Because nothing is worse than watching somebody press go 10 million times, right?
When I go into debug an app,
we actually look at the developers. There's a physical characteristic that tells us the debuggers have been developing wrong and debugging wrong. You know what it is? We look at their hands.
And if we see this, we know they've been pressing go 10 million times. It's like this.
We want to program this debugger, right? You've got a hypothesis. Hey, I've got this idea. Hey, it's the 10,000th iteration that's causing problems. The last thing you want to do is sit there and press code 10,000 times, right? You want to program the debugger. And that's what these breakpoints let us do, okay? So that's what we're after. This is all the postmodern age of debugging, right? That's what we're trying to do. I'll always start debugging first. There's two pieces of information, actually about 1.5 pieces of information they use to set breakpoints. First is IntelliSense. They give Theo Kyle a try with IntelliSense. Okay? What really has all the debugging information in it? A PDB file. Right? PDB files are everything. So you want to get that PDB file loaded so that the debugger knows what's going on. So you're always going to see me start with an F10, F11, so that we can get those PDBs loaded so we can do our debugging. Now, these breakpoint window codes, we'll see these as we go through here. First, let me draw something important for you. And previous versions of Visual Studio, 2005 and past, it was a solid red circle. Do you see the big improvement in the debugger? It's a 3D sphere now, okay? So, 10 artists, man, I'm telling you, worked on this. That is a location breakpoint. It doesn't take much to get me excited. That is a location breakpoint. You've set these, right? Set a breakpoint in the margin, right? That's the good thing. The main one I want to talk about is that one down there. That's an unresolved breakpoint, okay? It says breakpoint warning. That's not quite right. The unresolved breakpoint, you see this sometimes. If, say, you load up a source file and you press F9, but the DLL that source file belongs to hasn't been loaded, so it sets that unresolved breakpoint. But when that DLL loads in, the debugger smart enough to go, hey, you got code at this source line? If you do, then it turns it into a location breakpoint, okay? But if you go set an advanced breakpoint and you see this down here, you did not get your breakpoint set. That's the main thing I want you to take away here, okay? So let's talk about location breakpoints. Now, I saw a few hands go up about native code, right? There's a few old guys in the audience. So those of you, big question I get from native developers, like, hey, in native code, I can set memory breakpoints. Can we do that in .NET? Right? And the rest of you going, memory breakpoints? Never heard of that. But in native code, what you could do is you could set a breakpoint on a memory address, and then when somebody ever read or wrote to it, it would break in the debugger. Okay? It's really good for memory overruns, right? You know, but nobody cares about those anymore because, hey, we're all .NET developers now. So, we don't have memory breakpoints anymore. Why? It's worth mentioning to the old guys out there. To set a memory breakpoint required the physical address. Okay? That's what the CPU needs. This is using the debug registers on the CPU. That sets the physical address. Cool, right? That could work. But what does .NET do during a garbage collection? Compacts all your objects and moves your objects down. Why does it do that? Space and fragmentation issues, right? Avoiding fragmentation is everything when it comes to memory management. So what happens in .NET is that your object moves down here, but what didn't move? That guy there. So we don't have memory breakpoints. So people that are asking for memory breakpoints, what I finally realized they were asking is, they're asking me, John, is there a way to stop whenever somebody changes this field? Ah, yes, there is. Don't have any fields. Have properties instead. That wasn't a joke, but I don't like the laugh. Have properties. Do everything as a property. Why? Even private properties. Set a breakpoint on the setter. Ta-da! Now you know exactly who's setting that field and when they're setting. Okay? And you're probably thinking, God, that's not very efficient. Well, what happens during a release build? The compiler's not stupid. They're going to go, oh, this is a private. Oh, man, the hell with it. Inline. And it becomes a field. So you can set the breakpoint directly on the getter, so you have that during your debug build, but you don't have to worry about it during a release build because it goes right back to being a field, right? The compiler's smart. It just inlines the heck out of things like that. So this way you can set that breakpoint that you were interested in, okay? Now I'm going to mention keystrokes in here, okay? And let's talk about a little hint about Visual Studio. When you start Visual Studio, it brings up a dialog and it says, what settings do you want to use? Right? You all seen that. There's only one acceptable answer to that dialogue. What is it? General settings. And this is not a joke. Why do you always use general settings?
Always use general settings.
that is the only setting that shows all menu options. If you pick C# or VB or web, they actually start truncating the menus down. So how many of you have done that? Going, I know Visual Studio can do this. You start looking through the menus, right? I mean, come on. I mean, it's a big, complicated product with a lot of different commands. And if you pick C# or VB, I hope you know the commands to do in the command window. Okay? That's the problem. So always pick the general settings. Okay? If you've already started Visual Studio, how do we fix this up? Okay? So what you're going to do, okay, is go to Tools, Import Export Settings, Reset All Settings, click Next, say hell no, click Next. Here's how you can reset your settings. Okay? Now, it really drives me nuts that Visual Studio doesn't separate out this menu screw-up stuff from keyboard binding. That's really what needs to be done. Okay, maybe Dev 11, or more likely Dev 17. But, please, I beg of you, please pick the general development settings, because you need all of these menu options, right? Because, you know, don't hide functionality. You know, it's amazing how many people don't realize the cool stuff that Visual Studio has. Okay? Now, if you've been using a different keyboard binding, this is going to change your keyboard bindings. Okay? So, you know, I've gone through that hassle, and I got really tired of it. So what I did is I wrote a set of macros, because I love me my macros. I'll automate anything. Why spend 10 minutes doing it manually when you can spend half an hour to an hour automating it? Okay?
Hey, I'm all for that. Wow, you guys do the same thing.
So I've written a bunch of macros. When you download the code for this session, you're going to see a directory called macros in the zip. And there's windowsmacros.vsi. Double click on that, and that will install my macros into your copy of Visual Studio. By the way, these macros still work in Visual Studio 2008, but everybody in this room is going to move to 2010 tomorrow, period. Anyway, so you'll have my macros here. We'll talk about these. Many of them are for debugging. But I wrote this set of macros called the keys macros, because I got sick and darn tired of trying to figure out what keys bound to what commands. So the enumerate keyboard bound commands, you double click that, let that run. Macros are not the quickest thing in the world. This will grind away for a little bit. And then what it will do in your output window, eventually, my poor little CPU is, you know, going nuts here. What will happen,
come on, live meeting, you know, it's not going to kill you.
Well, you know, I'll go shut down these other instances and pretend like I'm doing work. And
what this did, this dumped out all the commands in the keyboard, the keystrokes bound. Okay? So this way you can at least start figuring out, well, you know, what command is
going to do incremental search. You guys all know that the editor has this wonderful incremental search in it, Control-I. Oh, that's awesome. You'll love me for that one. Okay? So now you can at least see what's bound to what. So definitely give that a shot, you know, play around with that and, make that happen for you. So you have those macros, go for it. Numerous places to set breakpoints. Let's take a look at the first one. So what happens here, I've got this deep call stack. So it does do, re, mi, fa, so, la, ti, do. Just have a deep call stack. And it's like Homer Simpson or something. And so we'll let this rip. But, you know, one of the problems that people have is that they say, I want to set a breakpoint on the return, right? I want to break, when I hit this function and it returns. And, so let's do our deep stack.
Yeah, you can tell from that last dialogue I'm the master of UI design, right?
I can drag buttons with the best of them. But, you know, so what you see people do is they say, yeah, I want to set a breakpoint on that particular, this deep stack. Yeah, that's what, so they double click here and then they go, set that breakpoint. Are we going to hit this breakpoint? No, right? Breakpoints stop before the line executes, right? You've all probably seen that, but, you know, I just want to make that clear. So I'm going to press F5 here, and you'll see we don't stop, okay? So here's what we want to do. Let's clear that, because there it stopped, F5. If you want to stop on a return address, here's what you're going to do. Go down in the call window here, click on your item you want to break on, then press F9. Notice the little sphere showed up there? Look close. Everybody squint. The sphere shows up down here. For you guys on that side of the room, too bad. I'll go over there for the second. But it shows up down there. That's the dot. That set a breakpoint on the return address. And to prove that to you guys, right, if you look closely here at the highlighted line, you'll see it's that method plus 0x, a whole bunch of 07e. What's that 7e, plus 7e thing? That's an offset, yeah. So that's setting a breakpoint on the return.
Okay? That's the important thing. So I'll press F5 now, and there
we broke on the return. Okay?
So if you want to get
on the return, don't be afraid to press F9 someplace in Visual Studio. You'd be surprised where you can separate points. Okay?
So,
so we can separate points on those return values, which is pretty cool. So let me set a bookmark here because we're going to play with that one. So there's, first big tip. Set your breakpoints there. Something the Visual Studio does well. But who's doing VB primarily? Okay? Rest of you C sharp? Those that didn't rate, are you F sharp guys or something? I mean, what are you guys doing? Yeah?
You do a copy con foo.exe and you type it directly in.
Well, that was a joke for the old guys.
Okay. Just make sure to end with
the control D. Okay? Anyway. So the old guys appreciated that.
You young folks? that was a really good joke. Anyway.
So when he set this break, okay, I've got this for loop right here that looks like most of you guys are doing C#. What happens when you set a breakpoint right there?
How many times is that breakpoint going to get hit? Just once. That's the initializer section of the for loop. Okay?
So what happens if your hypothesis is, well, geez, I want to stop, on the comparator section. So what you're going to do, I'm going to highlight it just so you all see it. We'll put the highlight there and then press F9. Hey, a semicolon ends the expression. And .NET, even in release builds, respects that. Native code, they only give you line number. Actually, .NET symbols have line number and column in them. Okay? So, hey, there's another one up there. There's my incrementer, good old comma operator, so I can do multiple. Press F9. Whoa, there you go. Okay?
So, just to prove this to you, let's go over to our breakpoints window, and you can see one I've got, they call it character, but, the character 19, 35, and 44. So I've got three breakpoints on that one line. And, this is kind of cool because we can get that set.
Now, if you look very closely, I can't zoom in because of live meeting. Look, everybody squint up there. Do you see something? How do you know you have multiple breakpoints on the line? The breakpoint glyph actually grows little horns.
Yeah.
So look, it's better when I zoom in on it, okay? Because it really shows the horn. But don't be afraid. If anything that's got multiple expressions on it, you can
set breakpoints on it. Primarily the for loop is a big one, but this way maybe you've got different scenarios that you want to break on that particular line.
Or you've got somebody that's writing code that's putting multiple expressions on the line, break on the one you want, right? That's the thing.
Now, when I click in the margin, what's that going to clear? It does them in character
order. No matter what order you set them in, they just clear the
lowest character, the next lowest, and go up.
So, but don't be afraid to set breakpoints like that. It's not, you
may not need this every day, but this can make the difference between,
solving it and wondering what the heck's going on. Okay, so there's your sub-expression breakpoints.
And it's very frustrating for me. I go into somebody's company. I don't know what you do for a living.
I don't know what your company does. I don't know your code. So, somebody else is driving the machine, right? And I'm sitting off to the side, right? You guys have heard of extreme programming?
Hey, this is extreme debugging, okay? So I'm sitting there off to the side and I say, hey, go set a breakpoint on that class and method.
And you know what the folks do? They generally sit there and they scroll and they scroll and they scroll and scroll for like an hour.
I pass out, right? Because I probably had to take a red eye to this company. I pass out waiting for them to go,
set a breakpoint, okay?
After a while, I wake up, and they're still scrolling. I say, give me that damn mouse, okay?
Because if you know the name of the class and method, you can set a breakpoint directly on it. With default keyboard, general keyboard settings, it's Control-B. Check your debug
menu, new breakpoint for your keyboard
settings. That's going to bring up the new breakpoint dialog, right? Make sure use IntelliSense to verify the function name is checked. It kind of randomly unchecks, okay?
You've been warned. Make sure that's checked.
What are you going to type in here? Type in the name of the class and method. Press OK. What did that just do? There you go. Set a breakpoint directly on dough. I guess I should say it like Homer Simpson. That's trademarked. I can't do that. We're at Microsoft. Anyway.
Even better. Press Control-B.
Type in just the name of the method. T. Boom. There you go. All right. Don't be scrolling around. You know the name of the class and method? Do it. Now, you guys don't know this about me, but I actually have ESP.
Extrasensory perception. And I have the ability to read minds. And I know about half of you right now are thinking,
ooh, what about overloaded methods? But I know you're not going to ask the question because you're all introverted.
That would be public speaking, okay? So, since I'm looking out for you, I have two methods called overload. Let's see what this does.
Let's do Control-D. Overload. Oh, which one did you mean? And this searches IntelliSense across your solution. As does, you know, setting a breakpoint on a class and method. Just setting it on a method searches the solution. Right, if you know the name, boom, just type it in.
Go for it, right? Don't screw around. You don't have to just click the margin to do this.
So, you know, you've got total control over how you want to set those breakpoints. Okay? So, you know, that's the big thing. Just set your breakpoint. Make it happen. Control B, let it go. Okay? And there's your choose breakpoints dialog. Okay?
Now, I know. Oh, wow, we have an extroverted engineer here. Yes, sir.
What happens if you don't match the name of the method exactly? Like you just type a character or you
case,
know,
mess up the case sensitivity.
The long name, so you type the first word.
Yeah, it's an all or nothing. That's an excellent question. You know, if you guys didn't hear, what happens if you mess up the name? Basically, it's all or nothing. Okay? So it's got to be exactly correct. There's no wild card or anything like that. Okay? Wouldn't that be awesome? In fact, I've got this list in OneNote. You guys all know OneNote's the greatest piece of software ever written. If you're not using OneNote, you're a loser. I love OneNote. I've done more debugging with OneNote than anything else. I've got this list in OneNote of a million things to do before I die, and it's all these little things. And like, this gentleman reminds me of number 732, I think. And I just made that up. What would be awesome, right, if you've got a blog, write an ad in the Visual Studio that lets you set wildcard breakpoints or regex. All of the information that this dialog is using is exposed through the automation model in Visual Studio. Okay? So you could write a wild card or, you know, did you mean this method type, you know, a pattern matching? You could write that very easy. Okay? So would one of you please do that and then email me the blog post? Because, man, I'd kill for that.
Could you do anything like control space to get IntelliSense?
Could you do control? Oh, let's try this. Now, sir, this may reformat my hard disk. Are you willing?
So let's do some.
No. This is why an add-in to do this would be audio, because then you have access to that. You could add this function out. And let me tell you, if you did that as a blog entry, you'd be massive. You'd have Scott Hanselman level of traffic, okay? Because people would die for this, okay? So would one of you please do this, okay? We would all appreciate you and sing your praises and name our third born after you or whatever. Okay, but, you know, it's just basically all or nothing here, okay? But, you know, one thing that was cool was that in native code, you could use wildcards. You could do class colon colon star, and that would set a breakpoint on every method in the class. And in native code, I use that constantly, because that's awesome for function coverage, right? Right, because that way, when you hit a breakpoint, you clear it, you keep running. Any breakpoints you got left, those are the functions you didn't call. So, again, I wrote a macro, because it allows me to automate stuff. So I wrote this thing called Breakpoint Helper, and what this does, it sets breakpoints on the current document that you got open.
Set breakpoints on doc method, double click that, let it rip,
and that sets a breakpoint on every method in the class. Okay, and then that way you've got that. So that way you can do your function coverage again. Okay, and you know, in fact, this, let me
go ahead and brag about my smarts. We've got a remove. When I remove, I only remove the ones I set,
right? So it doesn't screw up yours.
So, you know, this way, you know, function coverage, right?
Code coverage is, I use code coverage products more than I use debuggers. Right? Because code coverage products tell you what executed. And, you know, how many of you have done this where you've been
working on a bug, you check in a fix, then a week later you find the real bug, then you find out the fix never actually executed this part of the bug? Okay? So this is why you all have to use code coverage products constantly because they tell you what's executing in your app. Okay. I honestly use code coverage products more than I use the debugger. I want to know what's executing. That's going to focus my reading so I can debug faster. You guys don't realize the debugger is the absolute last resort. That's when you've lost, right? Never, you know, the debug, you know, but we're going to talk about how to get in and out of it quickly here. Okay? So, you know, that's what we're after, right? So set those breakpoints, and one of you please write that add in that lets us set breakpoints on wildcards, regexes, things like that. Okay?
Now, let's talk about something kind of interesting. So let's get another PowerShell up here. And what I'm going to do in this instance of PowerShell, whoa, not that big, is I've got symbol server set up here, right, because I, you know, want all the PDBs for my builds and everything. Just to show you, I've disabled the symbol server environment variable. So set title symbols are for WIMPs, okay? So we know which window it is. Then let's run DevENV. Let's look at something very, very interesting. So I'm going to go to Tools. Oh, no. This is new. Dev 10. Debug Options and Settings. They put this in just for me. Thank you. But that gets you right to the debugger options. And what I'm going to do here, symbols, is whack my symbol server because I laugh in the face of no symbols. Okay? So let's open up that little project we were just working on, CS Breakpoints. And I'm going to start debugging. Okay? I'm going to show you something kind of interesting. So we'll set a breakpoint here. Let's step over that. And just to prove to you, I don't have any symbols. I'll prove it by going to the modules window here. So does everybody see that next to symbol status, the only symbols I have are for breakpoints.exe? What does it say for everything else? Cannot find or open the PDB. And does everybody believe that, right? There's nothing up my sleeves, right? Right? We're cool. So here's what I'm going to do. I don't know if this happens to you, but I'll be open. Have you ever just gotten totally stupid when you're trying to solve a problem? Right? You're totally focused on the problem and like your brain takes a vacation. Right? So one time I was debugging along, I pressed Control B and I'm thinking so hard, I type, right? And you know, I don't even see it. Right, you know, because I'm so focused. This is my class and method. I click OK, and I'm like, what the hell is that? Never seen that before. Click yes, and I happen to have the breakpoints window up, and I went, whoa. You remember the Sesame Street song? One of these things does not look like the other, right? I got a plus sign looking tree thing next to console.writeline, but it's got the full sphere. What the hell? And so I said, oh, my God, ooh, what did that do? Well, my first thought was, oh, this is every place that has a call to console.writeline. And I'm thinking, oh, God, this rocks. So I did a quick grab, you know, my stupidity stopped, quick grab of the source code, and I called console.writeline 6 times. And I counted this. I've only got 19 here. What do you think it is?
Overloads,
right? So I pulled up the help, counted the method, so console.writeline, there's 18. But I got 19. So now I'm stumped. Right? Something doesn't feel right. So I pulled out the teller of all truth. You guys know what the teller of all truth is? Reflector. It tells all the truth. So I pulled out a reflector and I counted console.writeline overloads. There's actually 19. They forgot the document one. So this set a breakpoint on every single console.writeline overload. Now, do I have the source code for this? No, right? So, you know, maybe only a couple of you in this room will need it in the next 6 months, but when you need this, you need it bad. And in fact, if you go look at the CLR debugging API, you guys all read the CLR debugging API for fun, right? You don't? I'm crushed. I need to get a wife. You read the CLR debugging API. Basically says the idebug eval interface has an eval method on it. It basically says, yeah, pass us anything. We'll try to tell you what it is. And if you read, you know, between the lines what they're saying, in essence, they have reflection in the debugger. They just don't really make that explicit. Right? But turning off just my code turns this on, allows you to set those breakpoints even if you don't have the source code. So just to prove this to you, I do have a call to console.writeline in here. Let's do our deep stack, and we stop. Whoa, oh, this is new in Dev 10. Isn't it nice? They tell you they can't find source code now instead of just, like, randomly dropping everywhere. We'll go look at the disassembly.
Oh, man.
Isn't X64 assembler awesome? Anyway, we're at the call stack window down there. You can see we're in console.writeline. Okay? And the other big thing here is that if you're on 32-bit, they will show you the parameter values. So you'd actually see, I'm on 64-bit, so I don't see the parameter values right here. But you can see that's a call to console.writeline. Okay? So if you need to, I know somebody's calling this. Let me stop on it. Right?
You can do that. That's the takeaway here. Right? You don't need PDBs to set some breakpoints. Okay? They help for source and line. Okay? That's what you're after. But, you know, even if you don't have the PDB for some third-party component, you can still get some breakpoints set in their stuff. So, you know, that's the thing I wanted you to take away is that you've got that capability. Okay?
Now, what is a property in .NET? That's syntactic sugar.
Right?
There is no such thing as a property down at the raw IL level. A property turns into a method. Right? So if you have a property called foo, and it's got a setter and a getter on it, that's actually two methods, get underscore foo, set underscore foo. So if you wanted to set a breakpoint on a property, you'd have to put the get or the set underscore on it as appropriate. And then that would break on that property. Okay?
You're going to get this message box like we did. But, yeah, hey, go take a look at your breakpoints window. If you get that full sphere, you're in great shape.
Okay? So there's the breaking without source and all that. Now, another wild thing you can set breakpoint, I didn't know this, right? So a few years ago, TechEd was here in Atlanta. Woo-hoo! And I was really thrilled. You know, I'm not a Microsoft employee, and I got invited to speak at TechEd.
And as a non-Microsoft person, that's a big deal.
Okay, that's big.
And so you know, I'm excited, man, because I'm doing this basic talk. I'm like, yes, I'm going to rock, you know.
And so I show up at the workshop day, and I'm like, yeah, my talk is Tuesday at 2 o'clock, you know. I go to the speaker check-in area, say, yeah, I'm here. They go, oh, so glad you're here. We had to talk to you. Your talk, we had to move your talk. I'm like, oh, okay, move the room, no big deal. And I said, no, we had to move the time as well. And I'm like, that's weird. You almost never do that, right? When you guys set a schedule, it's kind of set. And they said, no, we moved your talk to 7 o'clock Tuesday night.
I went, wait a minute. You can't do that. I went to 2 o'clock. So they said, no, it's already been moved. We printed up the books, the announcement's out. Your talk's at 7 o'clock. I'm like, no, you can't, because between 5 and 7 is the free alcohol in the vendor area.
Nobody's going to come to my talk. You can't do this to me. And they said, well, it's already been done. You know, we're just, oh, it's like, oh, shit.
So, you know, they said, oh, and we moved your room, okay? And I speak on debugging, right? You know, at these kind of talks, you know, people wouldn't hear about Silverlight. Woo, you know. I just offended a bunch of people. I know. Hey, you know, Jeff Prosize is our Silverlight guy. And all you got to do is say, Jeff, man, it's just going to be like Flash. I'm blocking it, man. So, you know, when I speak at a conference, I'm in a tiny little broom closet room, right? I'm actually kind of surprised all you guys showed up. I'm like, wow, this is awesome. Who's paying you? But, so, you know, I go look for this room, a little tiny broom closet room where I'm going to speak, and I can't find the room. And I'm like, man, this is a bummer, man. They moved me to 7 o'clock after free alcohol. I wander back down to the speaker area. I said, where the hell is this room? And they said, oh, that's the auditorium. I'm like, okay. It's after the free alcohol. Everybody's going to go out after that. And I'm going to have 7 people in a room that holds 10,000. And, of course, they're going to be in the back row, right, because they're engineers. Nobody ever sits up front, right? You know, you guys are up front because you were late, right, you know. But it's not personal, but, you know, that's how it is in this business.
Right? You know, it doesn't matter where you go in the world either, right? You know, I've spoken in India. They're all in the back of the room, you know. So,
speaking of late.
Had to brave me. He's a total extrovert to do that, right? You know, I'm an introvert like you guys. I'd be on the floor in the back. But anyway, so I'm like, man, this sucks. So I go, I have to do my speaker, you know, the sound check at like 6 o'clock. So I show up like at 6 o'clock, and it's 2 sound guys and a video guy. And all these AV guys are like, wow, man, it sucks to be you. You got to talk after the free alcohol. So we do the sound check, and it's kind of like, test. Hello. And I'm like, oh, God. You know, it just echoes around the room. And, you know, so we're there, and, like, nobody's there. You know, like 6:15, nobody's there. 6:30, nobody is in the room. And, you know, I'm just kind of standing there going, oh, God, this sucks. Right? Even my friends haven't shown up because they're all drinking. And, you know, so I'm sitting there, and, you know, at about 6:40, I'm standing there with the AV guy. One guy walks in and turns around.
Walks right back out. And the AV guys went ballistic. They could not function. They
thought that was the funniest thing in the world, right? And I'm just like, oh, God, my life sucked. Well, I learned something, okay? Because at 6:52, I found out why they had to move my talk. Everybody signed up for it. I guess the bribes paid off. I don't know. I also learned a very major tip about presenting, okay? If you ever have to present at a Microsoft conference, you always go after the free alcohol, right? Because no matter what you say, it's funny, okay?
Best presentation, I felt like Chris Rock in an auditorium, man. No matter what I said, people are in tears.
But I'm, you know, I'm basically doing this, talking about showing folks how to set breakpoints. And I look in the back of the room, and I see this guy standing up. And I'm like, and I start to say something, but I'm looking at this guy going, maybe I shouldn't, right? Because I'm thinking he's going to leave because this guy, 6 feet 11 inches tall. More impressively, he's 6 feet 11 inches wide and shoulders. But physically, one of the biggest human beings I've ever seen in my life. And he stands up and he starts waving his hand at me. And I'm thinking, he's going to kill me. And I better call on him. So his hand, he's so big, his hand is brushing the ceiling of the auditorium, right? You know, he hears thump, thump, thump against the rafters. And he's waving, waving at me. He goes, and I said, yes, sir, don't kill me. He said, hey, John, that was really cool. You set that breakpoint with control B. He said, do it with control D. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? Right? And he said, yeah. He said, go clear out your breakpoints. I said, okay. He said, control D. I said, well, that's the find combo box up there. He said, yeah, type in the name of your class and method. He said, press F9. I go to your breakpoints window. Like, what the hell? He said, type in overload. Press F9. It's this totally undocumented place to set breakpoints. I'm like, sir, how did you find that? And this gigantic human being holds up the biggest hand I've ever seen in my life. Each finger is as big around as my thighs. And he hovers up, well, the finger's this big, you never know what keystroke is coming next. And I found the guy later. And I, like, shake forearm with him, right? I mean, you know, I, like, wow, palm my head, you know? It was just crazy. And I'm like, dude, man, I'm looking at these hands. I mean, each finger's like this. And I'm like, how do you type? He goes, oh, it's really simple. Right? And he bumped into this undocumented trick for setting breakpoints with the find combo box by trying to find something to bump the F9 key with these gigantic hands. So, you know, this became a quest, right? So I called a friend of mine on the Visual Studio team. I've been on Microsoft a long time. I'm like, hey, I signed the NDA. What are the undocumented things you can do up there? I said, there's got to be more. Are there any more? My friend said, yes. Bastard. But anyway, so you guys are in luck, right? I have to do a lot of traveling. So I don't sleep well on planes. So I started with Control A. And I've worked my way through every possible keyboard combination. So here's the trick, okay? The first one, okay, is kind of interesting because if you have, like I've got a program.cs here. If you type the name of the file that's in your solution and you hit the keystrokes of bound to edit.open file, and default keyboard is Control-Shift-G, that opens the file. I mean, who knew, right? You know, but that took me two trips to India, right, to figure that one out, right, you know? I live in Seattle, okay, and that's like 28 hours in the air, no layover. So I got through a lot of keystrokes on those trips. So, you know, there's that one. Another thing that's kind of bizarre, right? Visual Studio has a command window in it. You can get this to from the View Other Windows command window. And, you know, this shows you IntelliSense for all your help, the help here. But all the commands are available here. You can alias off and everything else if you're into that. So, you know, there's the about box. And so here's something that's kind of interesting. I found this one searching for XML. So I pressed Control D. I wanted to get the end of an element, so I went greater than. What the hell is that? It turns into a mini command window. Okay. You learn something new every day, don't you? All right. How many of you are keyboard? keyboard freaks like I am and hate touching the mouse, right? Visual Studio basically makes you grab the mouse to your hand, right? So here's a, this is the command window trick, since we got the mini command window here. And here's the trick. You do OF space. You guys see what just happened? OF space. There's all my files that start with C. There's all my files that start with O. And it's got autocomplete for your files. That's the super fast way. That works across your solution. That's the super fast way to open up files. All right, and you guys thought you were just going to learn about breakpoints here. Man, I got the goods. I got the good stuff. Okay? So this last one took 4 trips to India. Okay? Case sensitive. Okay? That's what screwed me up. Okay? So here you go. Okay? So you got to type, fix my bugs and blame
it on my coworker.
Just kidding. I saw that one. I can't give you those last 10 seconds back, guys. Okay? I just...
Okay, let's go back to do. I'll talk in a monotone now. Okay? You know, no more.
I totally screwed that one up. You should get your money back. So there's your find combo box. You know, control D, set the breakpoint. And there's all the tricks, right? You guys will get the slides as part of this class. So, you know, just wild stuff about setting breakpoints up there. So let's talk about our location breakpoint modifiers. Let's make our breakpoints smart, because all we've been doing up to this point is set stopping at a location. So the first one I want to talk about is a what's called the hit count modifier. So let's go to our big loop here, and I'm going to set a breakpoint down here, and you guys all know the trick with Visual Studio, right? Don't be afraid to right-click. You never know what you'll get.
Okay? Everything's hidden in a right-click. And I've right-clicked on the sphere there in the margin. That brings me up the properties, right? And if you haven't used the pen, you notice that there's some new stuff here. You can label breakpoints. You can export breakpoints, all this good stuff.
So you'll get in this habit because you can export your breakpoints.
You set up your debugging scenario on machine A, export it
to machine B very easily now, right? So this is a real nice feature. But the first one I want to talk about is the hit count. So we'll get this hit count set up here, and we will, you know, we can, it's a one base count. We can set it equal to a number, multiplier or multiple of, think modulo.
Wow.
When's the last time you ever thought of a modulo? And greater than or equal to. So I think multiple of looks pretty cool, and we'll do modulo 3,
and we'll set our breakpoint. And how do you know you have an advanced breakpoint?
Switzerland shows up.
Okay?
Switzer advanced, right? That's the, you know. So, you know, unfortunately, I've been trying to figure out how to make this tooltip bigger, and they haven't exposed this in Dev 10 for the edit fonts and stuff. So squint really hard and ruin your eyesight, but what you'll see there is that's the advanced breakpoint set at that location, okay? So that's kind of cool that we've got that
advanced breakpoint. And just to show you what's going on there, this is a really exciting one. We'll do our big loop, and we'll go to the autos. Hey, look at that. I is 2, right?
We'll press F5 again.
I is 5, right? But here's the totally cool thing about this. Let me clear the other breakpoints out. Look very closely at that hit count.
You see a piece of information that might be useful to you?
Oh, yeah, you get to see a count. So using this hit count breakpoint is, in essence, jamming in an indexer on the fly,
right? So here's a phenomenal scenario for this. You've got a for each loop, right? The all one word for each keyword, right? You've got some sort of crash. You're like, hey, which element is screwed up? Where I'm reading the file. What's screwed up? I don't have a counter.
So what are you going to do? You're going to set one of these hit counts.
You're going to set the hit count value to like 100 million. This is an unsigned int, so you can go to 4 billion on, you know, 32-bit, or what is it, 16 gajillion on 64-bit, right? So you can set it to like 100 million, run, crash,
immediately flip over to the breakpoint window. That's how far you got through that loop. So you can jam in an indexer on the fly, okay?
Another way I use this breakpoint, you know, my theory is that all the bugs are in code are in the sections that execute very little or execute all the time, right? That, I can't prove that, but boy, that feels right, doesn't it, right?
And so what I'll do is I'll set these hit count breakpoints, bump them up to 100 million, run the app a bunch, then do what?
Break in the debugger, look at my counts. And if I can see, oh, wait a minute, this stuff has barely executed, right? Where are the bugs there? It hasn't been tested that much. But if it's executed all the time, what are we looking at over here? Probably a boundary condition, right? Off by one error. And so this way I can start, you know, when I really don't have much of an idea where this bug could be coming from, at least I can narrow down where I want to start reading the source code, right? So this breakpoint gives us a huge amount of power of jamming in an indexer on the fly, right? So take advantage of that to see what's going on. Okay? So any questions about that? Well, good. Let's look at our next breakpoint. And, you know, these slides are pretty verbose. Yes.
Yeah, so the breakpoint was at 6. Let's say that you want to reset that.
Yes, if you want to reset the counter, I thank you very much, sir. You can reset that counter. Let me set the breakpoint again. I forgot to mention that. So let's do our hit count. Let's do multiple of 2 just so we get some of these. Okay, here's what you'll do. We'll execute that. Let me do it one more time. There. What you do is that you right-click. Notice the hit count is checked. Go back there. It's in the dialog here. And you can reset the hit count. There, I just reset it to 0. So you've got total control over that counter that's stored in the debugger.
What if you want to set it to a particular value?
You're screwed. No, it's 0 or nothing. That's, okay. Yeah, they don't expose that. And even in the automation model, because I've looked at that in the automation model, you can reset it. You can't do anything else to it. Okay? But then, you know, it is there. At least we can gain some control over what the value is. Oh, yeah, I want to do this 5 more times. Oh, wait a minute. Let me reset that counter. Okay? So, great question. Any other questions? Okay. Well, good. Let's look at another breakpoint that you're going to use all the time. That's the conditional breakpoint, right? And that one's a big surprise. You click the breakpoint there. Executing here. Oops. Get that out. Okay. So let's get my breakpoint set right quick. This time let's go to conditional. Okay. And this one's pretty cool because you can do some pretty smart things. Like I could just put I in there and say has changed. So this will evaluate I every time you hit this breakpoint. And if it's different from the last time, you'll stop. Okay. So you can look at, you know, hey, does this object point to the same thing? You know, that kind of stuff in there. Okay. So that's pretty valuable. But you also have the is true. So you can do I equal 3. And by the way, this checkbox here, that disables the condition, turns it back into a regular breakpoint, but doesn't delete the condition. So, you know, there's I equal 3. We can set our breakpoint. There's Switzerland again. There's our loop. Okay. So we'll kick this one off, and there I is equal to 3. Okay. And that's where we stop. Now, something that catches people by surprise with this breakpoint, let me show you something. So it actually does 2 steps of validation, okay? And this will catch you by surprise. So let's go back to the condition. And this time I'm going to do some obviously invalid variable name. I just typed a bunch of keys, equal 3. Now, here's what catches people by surprise. They expect the debugger to look, say, hey, is this in scope? No. They just look, is this an expression? That's all. Does it look like an expression? If it is, fine. But obviously, whatever that variable was, of some gigantic or whatever it is, that's not in scope, right? That doesn't exist. So when I press F5, okay, we'll go back here and I'll break. This is where they do the second half of the evaluation. So this is saying, and it gives you the error, like, hey, whoa, this thing isn't in scope. And so generally that means you probably mistyped, you know, case sensitive or something like that. Okay. So that's what you'll see there. Now I do want to stop here because I want to show you, this is one of the times, ooh, where did my breakpoint go? There we go. You look closely at that margin. You kind of see the white circle with the red little circle by it and the X. That's telling you, the debugger's like, oh, dude, I couldn't set the breakpoint. Okay. So when you see that symbol, that's what it means. Okay. Let's look at something else which will catch you by surprise. So let's go and execute again, and this time I'm going to set a breakpoint here, going to right-click, go to my condition, and I'm going to screw up the condition again. Okay? Surprisingly, it accepts it. Okay? And let's execute that. Oh, God, how cool is that? How awesome is this? Because what did we just do? We did an assignment. Woo! That's awesome. Oh, my God. Could this give us the holy grail of debugging? Right? What is the holy grail of debugging? That is stopping exactly when you want to stop. And it's much more than a condition like I equal 3, right? I live in Seattle. Let's pick an Atlanta story here. Maybe your hypothesis, your app is having problems when the temperature is over 100 degrees, which I hear never happens in Atlanta. Okay? So How are you going to check that condition? If that's where your app has a problem, how are you going to check that condition? Well, gosh, wouldn't it be nice to be able to set a breakpoint, like I got SB there, you right-click, you go to condition, SB. They didn't put this in for their health. They put this in because they want you to call functions for breakpoints. This is assertions on the fly. This is huge. And this is one of the best things about .NET debugging. That, you know, if your hypothesis is when Atlanta's over 100 degrees, our app has problems, well, you can go call a method that you've written just to go execute that function. And if that function returns true, you'll break. I mean, they put IntelliSense in here, folks. They want you to do this. Okay? So, you know, so this is kind of cool. So, you know, they even got the data tips. Okay? So, right? So this is cool stuff. So the whole trick here is, let me show you how I did this. The debugger. There is no such thing as private or protected in the debugger. Everything is public. Okay, the debugger sees all, right? Everything is public. So here's a case where I've got this class here called assert example, and I've got this m_name field, and if this thing is null, I got serious problems, right? My state is screwed up, okay? So what did I do? I do a conditional compilation. This is only active in debug build, where I check the value and I return true if there's a problem. Simple enough, right? I got it public here, but this could be private. We're just the same way. So here's the cool thing. So if we go look at using this, there's my assert example usage. I can set my breakpoint, right click, go to my condition, A dot. I want you to do it, right? Set that one. You could set these with macros too if you wanted to, if you're doing it a lot. Okay. And we'll let that rip. There you go. Stopped when that execution occurred in check name. And check name returned true. Could you screw up your app with this? Yes. If you call a method that drops a database table, wave bye, okay? Because it's gone. Right? You know, so, you know, you know, with great power comes great responsibility.
Not just for Spider-Man, it's for .NET developers, right?
Because you can really screw up your app with this. So write, you know, but write these functions like this and do a check. Go put, you know, go check state. Go look at your data and go do that advanced stuff, right? This really opens up super advanced debugging. Okay? And, you know, don't be afraid to consider using this for testing, right? Maybe when you hit this breakpoint, you call some method, like, you know, a group. You know, I did some debugging a group a while back, you know, Microsoft's sharing product, you know, it's really cool stuff. And I was stunned when I was up in group, because all the testers at group, you know what they do? They write functions to call from the debugger and at breakpoints. That's how they, you know, I was looking at one DLL that had three classes in it, had about, you know, 20, 30 methods per class. But then it had another 7 classes with another 400 methods just to set state in the main. And that's how they do a ton of testing. And these were some of the fastest testers I'd ever seen in my life, because they would get the app complete state just by calling a couple functions from breakpoints and other things. Really opened up. And they said, oh, this is our key. This is how we test so fast. This is one of our competitive advantages. They just use what the debugger gives them to do this. So this is really huge stuff. Okay, so start thinking out of the box, right? You can execute code because you have function injection in the debugger. Now, where does this execute? Who says that executes in the debugger? Who says debuggy? What, you guys all think it's Bill Gates' machine? I mean, God, it's got to execute someplace. Executes in the debuggy. This is part of that iDebugEval interface that lets you, you know, it says, hey, you pass me a line that looks like C# code, I'm going to do my best to execute it. It saves up your state, executes it, then restores your state. Okay? That's why dropping a database table happens, right? Because you're executing it in the current context. Okay? So very, very powerful stuff. And very powerful. So any questions up to this point? Okay? Any questions? Well, Glenn said he wanted 2 breaks, so I think
I saw stuff moving around out there, so there's food. Okay? So how about we take a quick 10-minute break. I'll stick around if anybody's got any questions. Otherwise, go eat Microsoft's food.